to episode 61 of the DFA Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick. Joining me once again today is RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, we have had about a week and a half between shows. There's a lot of little things that happened. Not a whole lot in terms of players switching teams, but we got some stuff to talk about this week. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I can't complain. We're recording on a Friday, and that's basically the best day of the week, unless you count Saturday and Sunday.
So, we don't record on those days, so I would agree. Those are the best days of the week.
That's very, very true. So, yeah, things are going well. It's been an interesting baseball season so far. Unfortunately, when it comes to the DFA podcast, this is the part of the season where, like, we only really talk about injuries and mostly bad stuff that happens. Occasionally, we get a good call-up, and we got a few of those this week, but it kind of seems depressing from a podcast standpoint, even though there's a lot of great baseball going on and some fun stuff, and we get to watch Mike Trout every day and all that kind of stuff. But from a DFA podcast perspective, it's a little bit of a down period for us, I feel like.
Yeah, but the good news is today we don't just have injuries. We have a Matt Harvey trade to discuss and a Robinson Cano suspension. So it's going to be a light episode all around.
Yeah, I guess we better start off with the Cano thing. That's going to be our big move for the day because it affects so many different things. So as you might have heard, Robinson Cano broke his hand and then promptly was popped for an 80-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. I believe I don't know the exact name of the drug that he was tested positive for, but I know it's a masking agent for other performance enhancing drugs. And he gave the typical whoops, I don't know how it got there. I wasn't taking PEDs kind of response to it, which we kind of expect. So I don't know. What do you think about this Cano thing and how this is going to affect the Mariners going forward?
Yeah, he was popped for taking furosemide, and basically, if you were a high school wrestler or something, you might take it in order to cut weight because it helps your body produce more urine. And you can see how that would be used as a masking agent to try to get rid of a quick-moving substance that would help you perhaps, you know, help your muscles or whatever. I would say the Mariners are toast because their pitching staff's already so poor. They have been relying on their lineup in order to carry their weight. And about Cano, they have no replacement for him. I mean, they brought up Gordon Beckham, and Gordon Beckham has not been relevant at a big league level since like 2009. I mean, we're it's almost been a full decade. So with due respect to his AAA success this year, you know, 300, 412, 500, I don't care if he changed his launch angle. I don't care if he cut his hair. He's not going to be a successful player in the big leagues at this point in time. So they're in a bad place, and they don't have very much depth either to call up from or to trade away to get a, you know, decent replacement. I mean, I know their plan is to move D. Gordon back to second base, and that's probably the best thing they could do at this point with Guillermo Heredia sliding into center field vacancy. But this team, I really thought they were around 500 to begin with, and this just makes me maybe lower my expectations a pinch or two, because I think by the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Athletics have overtaken them. And maybe I'm just too high on the Athletics. But yeah, I think this Mariners situation is just rotten to the core for them.
Well, I definitely think you're too high on the Athletics, as we have both discussed at length on previous episodes of the show. I don't know. I'm kind of thrown about the Mariners at this point because I feel like they have to keep going all in on 2018. Like, they can't just pull back and say, like, nope, we're okay now. We're going to survive this. We'll just plan for next year because the team is an older team. The team is a team without a whole lot of depth behind it. You can see the window for this franchise closing very quickly. Cano is playing pretty well. I think he's become one of those players that we don't talk about very much unless he's getting suspended for PEDs because he's been around for so long and his performance has been so steady. But I mean, this is a very irreplaceable player for the Mariners, which normally isn't a problem for Cano because he doesn't miss a lot of time. To expect to miss Robinson Cano for half a season or perhaps more is very weird. It's not something that happens very often. And the gap from him to Gordon Beckham over the span of a year or whatever's left of the year is like probably three or four wins. So that's a huge, huge dip down. But the thing is, the Mariners have been playing pretty okay this year. Getting a lot of mileage out of Wade LeBlanc, which is awesome. I'm really super psyched for that. It's also not going to continue. But they're third in this division. If it weren't for the fact that they were playing in the same division as the Astros and the Angels, I would say, you gotta, mortgage whatever's left of the future to get somebody else in there who can hit a little bit and play the middle infield and just keep pushing for it. But then I think about, like, man, the American League is tough, and especially that top end of it. So how do you really break past that into that next tier?
Yeah, and there's been a lot of industry chatter about the security of the front office and some of the things this organization has done over the past few months. Now, I'm not just talking about transactions, I'm talking about how they go about their business, and it's not good. I mean, there is legitimate reason to think that, this front office is in trouble. So when you talk about mortgaging their future, I think that was probably already on the table. They have to
No.
know there's internal and external pressure to compete this season. So, losing Canoa, it doesn't just hurt them in terms of wins and losses. It could potentially cost this group their job. Or, I guess, if you're, cynical, you could give them a bit of an excuse and maybe some padding on what ownership had anticipated from their record. So, yeah, I think they'll probably try to go out there and make a trade or something. And if we're just looking at the second base market, there's a couple of names out there that could potentially make sense. Starlin Castro, I don't think is a fit because of the money owed to him after the season. It really doesn't make sense to commit to a guy who has multiple years left on his deal at that amount of money because, you have Cano, you have D. Gordon. What's the point of doing something like that? So I thought Logan Forsythe made sense if the Dodgers would just up his money in order to, reinvest it elsewhere. And I named a couple of other guys in a piece on CBS, even Brandon Drury. I mean, he's kind of fallen out of favor quickly with the Yankees. He could play a couple different positions, so you can justify using him off the bench once Cano comes back. There are some options like that out there, but it's really not a great market for second baseman, and certainly there's no option that's comparable to Cano in terms of expected performance. And even if there was, the Mariners would not be able to acquire them.
The only thing that I was thinking of is, I know Gordon Beckham isn't any good, and that makes teams want to get aggressive and try to look for other options. I could kind of see the Mariners making like two trades to get guys who are like really questionable, maybe on that Gordon Beckham level, and just kind of see what sticks. I could see them going after some of the guys lower on the depth chart or in AAA for like from like the Rays or like the Mets. The Mets have guys like Luis Guillorme. They've got Jose Reyes, which, obviously I don't think most teams would be interested in him, but they've got other players at the minor league level. And the same thing I think is kind of true of the Rays that may not actually be a substantial upgrade. But if one of them catches fire for a little while, they could look really smart for a short period, a la the Taylor Motter trade from a while back when Motter was good for a half a minute.
Right, that makes sense, and it's kind of funny because Gordon Beckham actually leapfrogged over Taylor Motter on their depth chart, which, but yeah, and the name that came to mind when you were talking about that is actually Jake Peter with the Dodgers. The Dodgers got him in that small, well, it wasn't that small of a deal with the White Sox and the Royals over the winter, and they don't necessarily need another 25-year-old middle infielder with a sub 800 OPS in the PCL. Then again, they probably like him for reasons that aren't necessarily obvious to us, so maybe they wouldn't move him. But, someone like that who can conceivably come in and then later slide into a super sub position.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's true. And the guy that I was just thinking about is who just had a cup of coffee in Chicago was David Bote, is another type of guy at that AAA level who might be accessible to a team.
That's good for him, yeah. Although, if you're the Cubs, do you really trade from your infield depth at this point?
I mean, there's a lot of questions there, but yeah,
Yeah.
I could see why you'd be hesitant to do that, even though you've got, Zobrist and La Stella and Baez and
Yeah.
Russell and them. But yeah, I totally get that. Middle infield depth is not, it's kind of a myth. There's not a lot of teams that have it. So the Cano thing is going to be a real herder on the herder. Well, I'm a writer. I can use words. It's really going to be a pain for the Mariners. We should probably talk a little bit about the weird stacking of the suspension on top of Cano's injury. It's something that a lot of people feel really strongly about, and I kind of do too. So Robinson Cano was about to go on the disabled list when his PED suspension came through, and he's going to be able to serve that PED suspension even though he wouldn't be playing anyway because of his injury. Nobody likes that. Nobody likes that as a solution to people shouldn't be able to be suspended while they're already injured. But I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if there's a way around the fact that this is going to happen occasionally. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, we talked about it pre-show, and you're right. I don't know what the pragmatic solution is here because, as you mentioned, if the Mariners had not already put Cano on the disabled list and he's legitimately injured, well, he's just not going to go on the disabled list and he's going to be able to circumvent the suspension that way. So I don't really know if there is a solution here. In this case, he was clearly hurt before the suspension was passed down. So it's not like a situation where they put him on the DL. I mean, they wouldn't have had to put him on the DL anyway. We just took the suspension at that point. So I don't know. What about you? Do you have any ideas? Because I do agree, it's kind of, sketchy in a sense, but I don't really know how to fix it.
Yeah, the only thing that I can think of is that, you'd have some sort of mandatory, like you could do something where you, if a player is already on the 10-day disabled list when a suspension is about to be served, they get an additional 10 games tacked onto their suspension, or 9 games or 8 games, no matter what, if they're on the DL at the point of the suspension. I understand why you might be a little frustrated if, you're just about ready to come off the 10-day DL and you get the suspension and you don't really deserve to lose an extra 8 to 10 games or whatever it might be, but at the same time, like, you got popped for a PED suspension, so you deserve whatever punishment kind of that you get for it. And what's I kind of almost feel like what's another 8 to 10 games on top of the full 80 game suspension, but I really don't know. I just don't think there's a good fit for changing the rule in the case of, what's probably going to end up being, what, one situation that you find like this every year or two, maybe.
Right, and I feel like this is generalizing a little too much, but the way you present it, that makes it sound like a tax on using a poor chemist or something. Like, oh, your drug didn't even work, so look how stupid you are, miss more time. But I don't think I necessarily like the idea of adding 8 to 10 games or whatever, because if a guy got hurt, a guy got hurt. I feel like you're penalizing a guy for, breaking his hand here when he didn't really have control over it. And on top of that, you don't want to create an environment where players are even more unlikely to tell their teams, hey, I'm hurt, because they don't expect a suspension to come down, but nobody actually expects to fail one of these tests, especially when you're like a Robinson Cano level player and you have enough money to hire some let's say handlers who kind of know the ins and outs of what you can do, what you can't do, how you can get through this test or whatever. So I do agree that it's sketchy and that I ideally, there'd be a solution here, but I'm not sure if that one does it for me.
Yeah, I that was just kind of an off the cuff idea, and it certainly was not thought through, so any criticisms of it are super well warranted. I agree. Okay, so that will cover most everything for both the Mariners and for Robinson Cano. We had to get in the Gordon Beckham thing because it's like, wow, Gordon Beckham really exists still, and somebody's trying to give him some playing time. Him and Danny Espinosa, and for a while, Darwin Barney were the guys where I just cannot believe they keep latching on somewhere. But like we've said earlier, middle infield depth can be pretty challenging to find, so that's how it goes.
There's no such thing as middle infield depth unless you're the New York Yankees. Then
That's true.
it's a thing.
Yeah, that's the one team that probably has guys to spare, and I don't think they're interested in dealing them because why help anybody else catch them?
Yeah, Yankees are greedy.
Yeah, well, that's a topic for another I don't know, 3 or 4 years of podcasts. We'll let that one slide. We've got a couple. I won't say a couple. We've got a lot of little batting practice items that we're going to go over at a relatively rapid fire fashion. Mostly injuries, but we got a couple of moves and a couple of call-ups that are worth talking about. And we'll jump right into something you teased before. Our last episode, we talked a lot about Matt Harvey, and we didn't actually get into the trade that eventually happened, the Mets sending Matt Harvey and his salary to the Reds for Devin Mesoraco and his salary. I don't know. In the short term, this looks like a deal that really kind of worked out nicely for all parties involved, right?
Well, I like it more for the Mets. I mean, Mesoraco obviously has been hurt a lot in the last few years. Have no idea if he's going to be able to stay healthy. And really, if you look at his career, he's had like one good year and then one kind of okay year. And even that was injury shortened. So I get the skepticism on, you know, exactly what his output will be and over how many plate appearances it'll come. But I am not a Matt Harvey believer. And I know he started strong with, you know, four perfect innings or near perfect innings. But if you actually watched and, like, you know, observe that start, he got two swings and misses in 55 pitches. And prior to his last outing against the Giants, you know how many swings and misses he's gotten on all of his breaking stuff combined?
Well, having watched a lot of Mets games, I would guess like zero.
Right. He got two swings and misses. This is including that Dodgers start where he got two swings and misses on his breaking or his off-speed stuff. He had gotten two swings and misses in his previous four appearances combined. And when you think about Matt Harvey, okay, he doesn't have that amazing fastball anymore.
Nope.
He's not a command guy. So you're talking about someone with an okay-ish fastball, substandard command, and that's it. He can't get swings and misses with his secondary pitches. How often does that profile have success in the big leagues, let alone in a rotation, let alone in a rotation for a team who, A, plays in a very difficult division, and B, plays in a hitter's ballpark?
Yeah, it's I'm with you. I don't think Matt Harvey is just all of a sudden going to be a good pitcher now that he is with the Reds. I mean, it's not going to help him pitching in that ballpark. Like you said, it's not going to help him pitching against some of these hitters in that division where he doesn't get to beat up on teams like the Marlins as regularly. You said he's not a command guy. I think that's driving a lot of his success so far with the Reds is the fact that he hasn't walked anybody. And I definitely think it's interesting and probably a good thing that the Reds are really limiting his innings and the number of batters he's facing. But I think anybody's going to look better if they're only pitching four innings. You don't have to face the third time through the lineup. You don't have to really get tired out there. So I think a little bit of this isn't just the smoke and mirrors of, well, he's had a couple of good outings. I mean, he's also being put in a position to succeed quite a bit for this Reds team. And even then, it's not like he looks any different. He's the same guy.
Right. It's a chicken or egg situation. What comes first, the manager being a chicken or the pitcher laying an egg? And in this case, it's been the manager being a chicken.
I like that. I'd never heard that before.
I just came up with that on the spot. So, yeah, you know, we should just end the show here.
I was going to say trademark it, copyright it, get on MLB Now with that nonsense. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt Harvey is bad. Mesoraco, probably not going to be healthy. Probably not going to be productive. But
see, that's what I don't buy. I'm gonna jump in there because I think that if he is healthy, which he's not going to be, he would be productive because he has been when he's been healthy in the past.
I just think that it's likely that he's not going to be on the field to be productive, I guess is what I really meant. Because again, he's had one good year, then last year, and it was like 160 plate appearances. He was fine for a catcher, but it wasn't anything, you know, special. And so far this year, he's been fine as well, especially with the Mets and small sample. But yeah, so I guess it comes down to this. Do you want the often injured catcher who probably won't stay on the field, but he's also not going to mess up your clubhouse? And I don't think there's any question here. You take Mesoraco 10 times out of 10.
Oh, yeah, no question at all. And, you know, like you said, Mesoraco, you know, he's played five games with the Mets. He's hit two dingers. He's walked a few times. I mean, he's living his best life right now. It's 2014 all over again. But it's also five games, and you know, will he play five more games is the question, and it's a question that probably isn't going to get answered anytime soon. It just doesn't seem like this is a guy who can be counted on to play at most like, you know, what, 80 games in a season, something like that. And if he is injured, it diminishes his production. So enjoy him while he's healthy. Don't expect it to last forever. And good on the Mets for getting somebody who's not Jose Lobaton behind the plate.
Yep. So good job, Mets, overall.
Yeah. So let's talk about other catchers who tend to get injured a little bit. The Red Sox seem to be about to part ways with Blake Swihart, who's requested a trade. I don't blame Swihart for asking for a trade, and the Red Sox don't seem to need him, so it kind of seems like it would make sense that they would move on from this one-time untouchable prospect, right?
Yeah. Man, we're really going to talk about Blake Swihart. You can tell the podcast is just not in a good situation for topics when we're talking about Blake Swihart this early in the show. He's not good, right?
I don't know. Like, I still am not sure if he's good or not. That's the problem here. Because in the minor leagues, he had a very, very bad season last year, but the injury issues seem to be what stop him from displaying, like, real high-level talent. In the time that he was a real major league player in 2015 with the Red Sox, he was good. He was a good catcher and a good enough hitter. And then we just haven't seen anything since then. 2017 was a mess. 2016 was a mess. He keeps getting injured, and I wonder if we have something like a Mesoraco situation, or the Red Sox didn't actually help him out the way that he was handled very much, I don't think. You know, he was given the catching job only to have it taken away very quickly afterwards. He had the injury issues. He had the aborted move to the outfield. I kind of see him as the type of player who's going to settle in as some sort of do-it-all bench piece who can hit a little bit. But I just I think he's got to get some sort of chance to play regularly, or at least semi-regularly at the major league level, as opposed to what he's been doing for the Red Sox so far this year, which has been not much of anything except playing DH.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Although I will note, he has not really performed in the minors in a few seasons either. And you can credit that to the injuries, and that's fair. But I don't know. I'm just not sure if this guy is actually good or not. And I do agree he should go to a situation where he's going to kind of have the open fields to run around, so to speak, and maybe become like Austin Barnes for the Marlins or for the White Sox or whomever you want to throw out there. I mean, the Rangers could probably use this guy at this point. The Padres were batting Rafi Lopez like fifth last night, which tells you there is plenty of room for a guy like Blake Swihart to go out there and run around and whatever. So I don't know. I'm torn because part of me wants to say I don't think this guy is all that good and that we're probably, you know, just living off reports from, you know, what, 4 or 5 years ago at this point. And then part of me is like, you know what? What does it hurt to give him a couple hundred plate appearances the rest of the way while playing him at these various positions, especially if you're a rebuilding team, because this is the exact type of profile that you should take a chance on. So I'm going to guess he's probably not good, but I don't have an issue with one of these teams who has nothing to lose taking a chance on him and, you know, slotting him in around the diamond to see if you can create your own Austin Barnes.
And at the same token, I totally understand why the Red Sox would be not wanting to carry him as a bench piece at this point and getting out from under him, because they need every single run they can get at any time, and they cannot afford to let him run around, like you're saying, and play some different positions and get his feet under him. So I get it. I just think that I also think that the return for Swihart in some sort of trade is not going to be substantial. I mean, the Red Sox are not going to bring back somebody who's a top 10 prospect likely, or, you know, something like that. I think you're going to see either it be another change of scenery type of guy who's stuck on the bench with no options, or, you know, some other move that's more of a tit for tat rather than a, oh, well, we got a guy here who could be a pretty cool prospect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to get, I'd be surprised if they get a top 20 prospect, because this guy's out of options, has no track record of success, is almost always injured. And, you know, teams are really reluctant to change your catching situation, especially at this point in the year where we're still kind of early. And if you're a rebuilding team, you know, in most cases, you probably have either a young kid behind the plate who you're, you know, hoping develops with the pitching staff or whatever, or I should say, you know, a grizzly veteran who's there for his game calling or whatever, or there for his staff handling. Because, you know, usually if you're a veteran on a bad team, you're not there because you can hit. So with that in mind, I don't expect much of a return at all. I mean, again, he's without options. So you literally have to carry him on your 25-man roster the rest of the way. And that can be very disruptive to a catching situation. So I don't think it's likely they get much at all in return for him.
You know, the team that jumps out at me is a team that could get the most out of him is probably the Cincinnati Reds, who just traded away a catcher.
Yeah, I mean, their backup right now is Tony Cruz. And Tony Cruz, God bless him, has won more games than, I mean, he's probably been on the bench for more wins than basically any other backup in baseball. And it's not because of anything he's done. So he's living the life.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be Tony Cruz. Nobody's arguing that. It would be better to be Tony Cruz somewhere other than Cincinnati, but absolutely right. All right, so we've got two quick DFAs that we'll talk through, a specialty of this podcast. The Marlins have designated Junichi Tozawa for assignment. I don't know if he's going to get picked up anywhere because of his contract, and sort of the same situation in San Diego where kind of a surprise to me, or would have been at the beginning of the season, the Padres DFAing longtime Padre turned Yankee turned short time Padre Chase Headley being designated for assignment. Do you see either of these guys latching on somewhere this season? Do you see them probably taking a minor league deal and going somewhere else? Do you see them, either team, pulling off a trade for one of these guys, or do you think this is going to be one of those things where they end up outrighted to AAA?
Yeah, I think you're going to see. Well, I think both of them will elect free agency. I don't think you're going to see either of them go to AAA, at least not, with their current team. That said, I do think that at least Tozawa will find a minor league deal somewhere because he has a track record of success in the past, not too far behind us. I mean, what was it, in 2015 and 2016? He had good peripherals. He had an ERA plus over 100. Then he signed with Miami, and he has been awful since. And he still misses bats. I know he misses the plate and he hasn't missed barrels enough, but somehow he still found a way to record strikeouts. And the splitter, last I saw, still gets swings and misses and all. But he's a short right-hander with a so-so fastball, and he likes pitching up in the zone. And sometimes that leads to home runs. And in his case, it's led to a lot of home runs. And I don't think his fastball is as good as it used to be. I don't think it has the same hop or anything. So he's kind of, lost that mode of effectiveness for him. He needs a change of scenery, maybe a change of idea to get back to normal. With Headley, I don't know if he's toast, but he's probably pretty close to toast. And maybe a team will give him a look as a bench player with the hope that he can, serve as third base slash first base insurance. But I think both of these guys are probably realistically looking at taking a minor league deal elsewhere and maybe working their way into a position where they're depth, but not necessarily in the minor league capacity.
Yeah, with Headley, I kind of agree with you. He does kind of look like toast at this point. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he just decides to take the rest of the season and hang out with his family or something like that, because it just has been so bad in San Diego for him the second time around. With Tozawa, teams need innings, and that's the one thing about Tozawa is he's going to show up. He really hasn't missed a lot of time over the last 5 or 6 seasons. And I think you're going to see some team at least be make some sort of offer to the Marlins for him. Probably just, some sort of minor league depth flyer type guy. But it wouldn't surprise me if he got traded because, yeah, he's been bad. But teams are so desperate to have an extra guy in the bullpen and so many injuries been going on. It just wouldn't surprise me at all if somebody be like, well, he can get a strikeout once in a while. Let's go ahead and, trade that one guy from low A who we can't remember the name of for him.
If the Marlins ate money, you mean? Or do you think a team would really take on around 4 or so million? It'd be more than 4 million at this point for.
Oh, the Marlins would have to eat the money. I don't think there's any question about that.
I think the Marlins enjoy eating money in general. But just to throw out a statistic here, Tozawa has used his splitter about 16% of the time this season. When he's thrown it and gotten a swing on it, it has missed the bat about 45% of the time this season. So it would seem like this guy could benefit perhaps from going to an organization where they're willing to let their pitchers throw more of their off-speed stuff because he's thrown nearly 60% fastballs this year. It goes 92 miles per hour. It doesn't really have the kind of carry you would like to see for a guy to pitch up in the zone. So maybe he goes to, I don't know, some smart organization. Maybe he goes to the Dodgers, let's say, and they're like, hey, fewer fastballs, more curveballs, more splitters, and all of a sudden he turns into the latest Dodgers success story. And they have another book wrote about how smart they are, and they do all this while being on pace to lose 100 games. So yeah, that seems like the likeliest outcome for him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So now we can talk about the largest subsection of our batting practice segment, and that's injuries. There are a lot of them because it's a baseball season, and we always seem to stumble across a whole bunch of injuries this time of year. So let's get into a couple of outfielders. I'll do them kind of as a group. We saw that recently Ryan Braun, Yoenis Cespedes, and Starling Marte have all hit the 10-day DL. What do you find interesting about these injuries, if anything?
I mean, are we talking about the injuries themselves? Because I don't really...
Or the injuries or how they affect the team or the players being injured, anything about it. We're going to keep this light and breezy.
Yeah, I guess if we're talking about one of those, I would focus on Braun because, you know, when we entered the season, we all thought the Brewers had too many outfielders. And that situation's kind of worked itself out. You know, Domingo Santana, last I checked, did not hit like Domingo Santana should hit. I don't think Braun had been hitting that well either. And Brewers are running out Jesus Aguilar every day at first base. And that's not really a great situation to be in necessarily, even though, you know, Aguilar has been much better than I ever anticipated him being. So it's kind of funny how those things work their way out. But that's the most interesting of the trio to me.
The most interesting to me, honestly, is Marte. Even though it's a minor injury, it opens up a spot in the lineup for a guy we were going to talk about later, but I'll talk about now, Austin Meadows. Who for a while was like one of those next big things as far as, you know, really interesting, good top 10 level outfield prospects. And boy, has he been kind of passed by over the last couple of years while he's dealt with injuries and ineffectiveness, even just playing in AAA. He's had a little bit of a comeback this season to start the year in AAA. He's at least hitting better than he did last year. But he doesn't look like anywhere near the same type of prospect he used to be. But he is going to finally get some burn, hopefully, in Pittsburgh. Do you have any thoughts on Meadows?
I mean, maybe he was bored, but in all likelihood, he'll probably get hurt himself and they'll be having to dig deeper into the depth chart because, I don't know, he always gets hurt. That's the problem with him. And he's so young, there's still a chance he develops into a first division caliber outfielder. But I definitely have my skepticism about him, not only as a player, but as a body, as cold and heartless as that sounds. And I'm not sure if he's going to work out to be as good as the expectation was a few years ago. And that's a shame because at one point he looked like Andrew McCutchen's heir. And now he looks like a guy who could conceivably find him in a fourth outfielder role for a few years until the Pirates get tired or find an upgrade over him. And that's, again, a very weird and sudden shift considering, you know, how high his stock was just, what, 2-3 years ago?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. How much do you think this is going? Marte's been playing really well. Do you think this affects at all the fact that the Pirates are the number one team in the National League Central as of today?
Of course. I mean, Marte is really good. And, you know, last year's suspension, I think I said it on the podcast too, like, I was optimistic about a bounce back because either one, he had played well in the past without substances, or two, he had played well in the past with substances and had found a way to get around the testing. So either way, you know, a bounce back was certain to happen, or almost certain to happen. I don't really buy into the Pirates being this good. I don't really buy into them hanging with the Cardinals, Cubs, and Brewers. That's not a disrespect to the Pirates. I had them, you know, if they finished around 500, if you told me entering the year they were going to do that, I would have been like, well, that's pretty good outcome. I think they had more depth than anyone really anticipated, and certainly guys like Colin Moran have played better than I think a lot of us thought. But no, I don't think this team is a legitimate contender, and if they stay in, hey, that's a great story, but I just, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, losing a guy like Marte is going to hurt their chances of doing so, but no, I don't think they're a legitimate contender to begin with, and I don't think that this is necessarily going to be the thing that sinks them, but I think it's just going to be a talent thing in the end.
Yeah, and once again, you know, I think on multiple occasions I was down on Colin Moran, especially as the return for Gerrit Cole. Not for nothing, but Moran has been playing very well. I'm excited to see that he's getting on base as much as he is, hitting for a little bit of power, but just enough to be a pretty good third baseman for this team. So good on the Pirates for getting him. They only had to give up Gerrit Cole, who is amazing.
Yeah, I thought Moran's upside was a left-handed David Freese, and I guess it looks like he's a little bit better than that at this point, especially in the on-base category. So kudos to him. Kudos to the Pirates front office if he keeps it up. But please shave that thing, man.
It's not good.
That's not good. Nobody thinks that's a good look. Nobody.
No, I don't think so. But so it's great for the Pirates if they were able to get something, good and really a long-term regular in Moran. Of course, Gerrit Cole is, I don't know, do you want to say easily the AL Cy Young winner if the season were going to end today, striking out as many guys as like Craig Kimbrell does as a starting
Oh, I
pitcher?
mean, it'd be him or Verlander, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I haven't compared their stats, but yeah, it'd be an Astro who they acquired in the last 12 months via trade.
For very little return, if you ask me. So that's
Yeah.
something very wrong is going on here with I would not expect the Astros to make a trade at the deadline because I think all 29 other teams will be like, nope, not having it.
It's gonna be like that scene in Moneyball where Michael Lewis suggests that Chuck Lorre is actually scared of trading with Billy Bean,
Yeah.
which honestly I don't think that was true,
No.
but this the idea of a general manager just being like, I'm terrified of this guy, is still kind of funny to me.
And I'm by the way, Dallas Keuchel, the way he's been pitching over the last couple of weeks, they pretty much have had the three best pitchers in baseball. So good on them. So let's go into a couple more injuries. Kenyon Middleton out for the season. Jason Castro out for the season. We talked about them a little bit last time. Anything else you want to add on those two guys being out of commission for a while?
No, I mean, it stinks. I like watching Middleton and I like Castro for what he is. And it's unfortunate that they're both out for the season already and it's not even, late May.
Yeah, it's a bummer. So moving on, I mean, there's not much else to say there. It sucks. I'm disappointed for both those teams. Let's talk a little bit about the Cardinals. The Cardinals are dealing with a really serious spate of injuries. We talked about Yadier Molina last time we were on the show. Now his backup Carson Kelly is injured. Luke Gregerson is injured. Carlos Martinez is out getting an MRI. Adam Wainwright is injured. Things are looking much, much worse than usual in St. Louis for this Cardinals team.
They've lost seven players to the DL in May alone. We are recording this on May 18th. They've lost a player to the DL basically every other day. And yeah, I mean, they're down, just to give the perspective beyond Carson Kelly and Yadier Molina, their top two catchers, they've also lost Carlos Martinez, the staff ace. They've lost Adam Wainwright, the staff ace of old. And they've lost three high leverage relievers. This team is having to really dig into their depth. And the thing about this team is that they've actually been able to succeed so far without their stars pulling their own weight. I mean, if you look at Matt Carpenter, Marcel Ozuna, Dexter Fowler, Colton Wong, if you look at their numbers, they have not been good. So
No.
it's been guys like Bud Norris, small people, helping to, pull the Cardinals along and keep them in the National League Central race, which is kind of remarkable when you think about it. But yeah, it's a bummer to see this many injuries pop up for one team because the Cardinals were seemingly authoring this unlikely underdog story that usually gets ascribed to them, but actually would have been legitimately ascribed to them this time. So hopefully they can hang around until they get some of these guys back, at least some of these guys on track, and that we can have a healthy three-team or four-team race in the National League Central the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like, you kind of expect if one team is going to be able to find like a worthwhile 1-2-3 punch that can carry them through in their lineup from Tommy Pham and Jose Martinez and Paul DeJong, you would be like, "Oh, yep, that's the Cardinals, that's what they do." But I just think at some point the steam's got to run out on this team because these guys are all playing at least a little bit over their heads. Miles Mikolas is the guy who's holding up the rotation, and I am super here for Miles Mikolas pitching well, but you can't imagine this is going to keep up for a whole season. And, Luke Weaver's pitching well, and Michael Wacha's had a good couple of turns through the rotation, but it's one of those things where it just does not feel sustainable at all. And the Central is too dangerous to try to be able to carry through with this many injuries and things like that. So even though they're 5 games ahead of 500, they're only third in the Central, and they're just a game and half a game ahead of the Cubs. This is a tough place to be.
Yeah, and the good news is Alex Reyes is going to be back probably sooner than later, and he is pumping absolute gas. So maybe the
Yeah.
rotation or bullpen, depending on how they want to deploy him, will get a boost from that. But you're right, they need to get healthy, and every day they lose another guy is just makes it that more unlikely that they're able to hang around and actually compete for one of these wild card spots or even the division. And I don't know. The funny thing again, though, is that all the stars have been awful. Matt Carpenter, he's a pretty steady performer. He's been horrible.
Yeah, something looks off with Carpenter, and it has for a while now. I'm not as like I'm most concerned about Carpenter because I think he's actually seeing a long-term dip in performance. I'm less concerned long-term about guys like Ozuna, who honestly I thought was a little overrated this offseason, coming off that 2017 performance, and Dexter Fowler, who it's much more inexplicable, I feel like, their downturns compared to Carpenter's, who it kind of, you got a feel in 2017 that he might be going this way.
Yeah, that's still disappointing because I really like Matt Carpenter, and he's going to be one of those guys you look back on his career and you say, wow, he was better than I thought.
Oh, for sure. For sure. He was very underrated for a long time, and now, unfortunately, he's playing to his ratedness at this point.
You were proud of that line, weren't you?
A little bit.
I mean, it wasn't chicken or egg, but it was fine.
Hey, I gotta try to keep up with you, man. Although, to be fair, if the Mariners front office does go under, I'm certain that we could bring on Jerry DePoto to replace me on this because we know how much he loves transactions and podcasts.
Oh man, that would end horribly for us. Can you imagine us getting dunked on left and right by Jerry DePoto on here?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I
I
mean it
can
would.
absolutely imagine that.
Yeah, it would not go well. Speaking of things that have not gone well, Matt Wieters had a operation done on his hamstring. He actually was performing decently this year before he got hurt. He had a 97 OPS plus in about 23 games. The Nationals signed him offseason before last, hoping that he could bounce back. He really has not bounced back, and it's at the point where you start to wonder if Matt Wieters is ever going to
Was that
sign
my
another big
friend?
league deal, regardless of how his health turns out the rest of the way. So, you have any words on Matt Wieters? Because, the Nationals are already rumored to be into JT Realmuto, and there's a real chance that by the time Wieters gets back, they may have went out there and found one of these veteran solutions to their backstop dilemma.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that either Realmuto or Jonathan Lucroy or one of those types of players is going to be a national before too long. I wanted to bring this up because, just like you said, Wieters had actually been hitting okay for a change, which is, he needed to do that for this Nationals team to really stay in it, I feel like, at this point. And losing him for any extended period is going to be a bummer. I still, every season, even though he's not that good, I still hold out a little bit of hope that he's going to have this nice bounce back. And I think you're right. I think we're getting to the point where it's just not going to happen. Or we passed that point a year ago.
Yeah, he's had one of the weirdest career arcs in the last decade or so because when he came in from the draft, he was well regarded, and it was sort of a question of how long would he remain behind the plate because of his size. Then, Pecota thought he was Superman, and he never actually forced the question of should you move him to first base because of how valuable his bat is, because he was never able to hit that well. So it was always he has to remain behind the plate to be a starting caliber player. And that is not what the expectation was during his draft days or during his prospect days. So it's kind of wild to look back and say, at no point did he force that conversation, which is not something you can say about guys like Joe Mauer, Buster Posey, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, completely agree with you there. Let's move on to a couple of more. I guess we'll cover some infielders first. More injuries. Adrian Beltre's got a hamstring issue. The Tigers lost Jaime Candelario. DJ LeMahieu hit the disabled list for the Rockies, and Lucas Duda has plantar fasciitis and will be spending some time on the DL for the Royals. A bunch of teams in various levels of disappointment. LeMahieu is probably the most interesting and relevant in terms of his team actually playing well. The other ones, we're talking about players for the Tigers, the Royals, and what was the last one? The
It doesn't even matter.
Beltre was
Doesn't.
with the Rangers. So those are not some teams that are really losing a lot, even though they're losing good players. But, LeMahieu is a big kind of blow for the Rockies, I feel like. What about these injuries jumps out to you?
Well, Candelario is a guy I think we both liked when the Tigers got him. He's played well this season. He's played well since the trade, actually. So that's a bummer to see him go down. But yeah, LeMahieu, I think we've also expressed, how he's going to be a nifty signing for someone. And yeah, it's a bummer because the Rockies can't really hit at all. And he's one of the guys who's been able to hit the season. He's been able to hit consistently. And, you know, you never like to see a guy get hurt. You especially never like to see a guy who's kind of known for his durability in recent years get hurt during his walk here. So hopefully, you know, he's able to get back into the lineup pretty soon. And I don't know. Doesn't he have like a wrist fracture and a thumb injury? Or am I conflating him with someone else? Because no, that's a bummer of a combination.
I don't think you are wrong there. Sprained left thumb and a small fracture in the area, according to Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post. Yeah, he wasn't having quite as wonderful of a season as he did in that breakout kind of 2016 year that he had. But he is super, super solid. And again, we're talking about more middle infield injuries. And it's just not a position of super depth for a lot of teams. Even the Rockies. The Rockies have a pretty good, pretty deep kind of team. And I don't know if they're going to try to use Tony Walters out there a little bit more than they do normally. I don't know what exactly their path is going to be. Right now, Daniel Castro is up and replacing him. But is it going to be something where it might be better to move Ryan McMahon there for the short term? I don't know. But they do kind of got to keep their foot on the gas and get to a point where they can actually chase down the Diamondbacks, I think.
It's kind of amazing to me that Daniel Castro is in the majors, because I remember writing his annual comments when he was like a 20, you know, young 20-something with the Braves, and I had not thought of him in years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't even think I knew he was still in organized ball, and yet here he is. So good for you, Daniel Castro.
The one other thing I'll bring up about these injuries is relates to that Jaime Candelario injury. So now his replacement in the lineup for the Tigers appears to be Pete Cosma, will now be the starting third baseman for the Detroit Tigers.
A week ago, we didn't even know he was an organized ball still, and now he is starting on a team that is not in last place. It's a remarkable life, that Pete Cosma life.
Not only that, he is the number two hitter, where you are supposed to put the best hitter in your lineup.
Moving on, I don't think either one of us is going to have anything nice to say here, so it's best if we just move on.
Good call.
We're trying to reduce the snark level, folks.
We'll move on briefly to two center fielders. Both Adam Eaton of the Nationals and Bradley Zimmer of the Indians have hit the disabled list. Obviously, Eaton probably is the more notable of the two, I don't think we covered A.J. Pollock. Well,
we did not cover A.J. Pollock. That's a bummer.
Yeah, that's a bummer, too. So three center fielders out with serious injuries. Pollock obviously has been dealing with injuries for the last couple of years, playing wonderfully this year. I mean, just absolutely fantastic this season. Zimmer has been a little bit of a disappointment since coming up as a prospect, but has been a useful part for the Indians at times. And Eaton, of course, again, much like Pollock, has been plagued by injuries ever since coming to his new team. Anything you want to jump in with on those guys?
I think you stated the obvious with Pollock. It's a shame for multiple reasons. You know, for one thing, the Diamondbacks have been going through some struggles lately and haven't been able to hit at all, really. And beyond that, he's also in his walk year. And with LeMahieu, you don't want to see a guy get hurt when he's this close to getting money. So unfortunate all around. Hopefully he gets back sooner than later, because that Diamondbacks team really needs him. I mean, you could have made the case that Pollock, if there were such thing as a quarter season MVP, would have won the award in the National League because of how much he's meant to Arizona so far. Again, so shame that he's hurt and shame that he might miss significant time.
Yeah, no question at all. I completely agree with you there. Are we starting to think that this Adam Eaton trade was not something that worked out for the Nationals? I mean, at the time, there were a lot of folks who were very, very down on the deal because they were so high on Lucas Giolito or Ronaldo Lopez, both of whom have not exactly covered themselves in glory at the White Sox. But, you know, Eaton also has not been able to take the field nearly enough for the Nationals to justify the trade on any level. But he had, in the brief time he had played this year for the Nationals, he was crushing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's performed when he's been on the field for them. But yeah, you're right, the health aspect certainly started to weigh in there. I think it was still a fine, a good deal for them. I know Ronaldo Lopez has shown some potential this season, but when I say that, he has peripherals that are very close to Mr. James Shields' peripherals. And God bless James Shields, the best pitching coach in the world, but James Shields is striking out six batters per nine and walking four per nine. He's actually giving up half as many home runs as Lopez is. So, you know, Lopez is 24. There's good stuff there. You know, there's reason to think, okay, he can still get better. But boy, I think his shiny ERA might be throwing people in. With Giolito, have you seen how bad he's been? He has walked more batters than he struck out this season.
Man, he's broken.
Been awful. Yeah, he's 23. I mean, there's still time, but that rotation for the White Sox, it had like three, you know, younger guys. It's like, oh, you know, this is going to be fun to watch these kids develop under Cooper and next to Shields. And even Dave Duncan is in that organization now. And it's like, wow, they have a perfect system to get the most out of these guys. And every single one of them, you know, I guess you can spare Lopez if you buy into the ERA. Every single one of them has been a huge disappointment this year.
Yeah, they've had some real tough luck. So they've really had to get behind, you know, old man Shields and, you know, that's
why they're not lying, Shields.
That's why they're 11-29.
That's a bad team right there. A very bad team. I don't think there's anyone, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but I'm pretty sure some people were like, oh, this might be the year they shock people. And they are shocking people by being in last place in a division that had this version of the Tigers and this version of the Royals.
Yeah, it's not a good scene there at all. Last guy I'd like to go over is Mike Soroka of the Braves. It was real excited to see him debut this season, and now, of course, he's injured because that's how things go in baseball in 2018. So Mike Soroka, I think his injury is thought to be relatively minor, but and I'm not 100% sure what it is, but he was looking really sharp before he went down.
That's the best combination of takes there. His injury is thought to be relatively minor, although I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, this is called my preparation for this podcast had a blind spot with Soroka's injury.
I see, but here's the thing. I want that to be how we just start to describe every pitcher injury now. It's thought to be relatively minor, although we're not certain if it's an elbow, a shoulder,
a finger. It's a shoulder injury. It's a shoulder strain.
Doesn't seem minor.
No, it doesn't. But they boy. The club has said he'll be coming out off the DL in time to make his next scheduled start. Whether that's wishful thinking or whether or not that's the truth, but I really hope it's the truth. And I'm sure the Braves do too, because Max Fried will be taking a spot in the rotation, and Max Fried has not been terrific in his Braves career.
He's been minimum Fried. That's so bad. Oh my God.
You're terrible, man. You're terrible.
Moving on, I think we're just going to do some rapid fire call ups, starting with Clint Frazier, who thankfully has seemingly recovered from the concussion issues that plagued his spring. So, Clint Frazier, are you still a believer that he can turn into a worthwhile starter, or are you starting to believe that he is either trade bait or, you know, just sort of a reserve outfielder for this Yankees club?
I think he could be a starting outfielder. I certainly do not think he will have any opportunity to do that in New York. Even if you want to run Giancarlo Stanton out there DH forever, you don't want to mess with the guys that are currently in the outfield for the Yankees. And even though they're dealing with the injuries to Ellsbury and Bird and McKinney, this is not something where you probably want to let Frazier just languish on the bench for too long. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him be the key component to whatever sort of trade the Yankees make at some point during the season to get another pitcher or get some more bench depth or address the first base situation, whatever they choose to do at some point, because I do think Frazier could and will still be a legitimate big league hitter. I just don't see him doing it for the Yankees.
Yep, I have nothing to add there. The Rays, sticking in the American League East, brought up Christian Arroyo. It's kind of funny they brought up Arroyo when Willy Adames has outplayed Arroyo this year and would seemingly, you know, fit the roster a little better. I cannot imagine why the Rays might want to suppress Willy Adames's service time anymore. And, you know, note to Brody in post-production, please add the sound of a cash register at this point, you know, a couple of times perhaps. So, yeah, Christian Arroyo, I am not really high on him. I know he was the main piece in the Evan Longoria trade. Well, no, he wasn't. He was not the main piece. The main piece was saving money. the main secondary piece in the Evan Longoria trade was Arroyo. You know, the hope is that he can be a solid hitter. I don't really know how likely it is that he's going to be more than maybe a league average player. You know, maybe he's Logan Forsythe 2.0, and I mean the good Logan Forsythe, not the bad Logan Forsythe. And that's the case. He's fine. He's just not really equipped to be the main piece in a deal for your franchise player. So that's a depressing situation.
Yeah, and it's a little nervous that he may be seeing some time at second base. That doesn't exactly throw me, although I do think Daniel Robertson will get some time there when they play against lefties as well. The whole Rays thing is kind of surprising to me. Whenever we expect them to be good, they're bad. And whenever we expect them to be bad, they're good. And this season, I expected them to be bad, and they've played better than I've expected. In no small part recently due to guys like CJ Krohn and Matt Duffy and Denard Span. Your guess is as good as mine. And Johnny Field. Really, your guess is as good as mine at this point. As to how they're able to make it work with the roster that they've got here. I just don't see it lasting a long time. I do like that they called Arroyo up. I'm glad they're giving the young guy a chance to play as opposed to, you know, investing too heavily, too much time in guys like Field and Wendell and these 26-year-olds that the Rays often turn into, you know, moderate to bad regulars for a couple of weeks before they turn back into what we thought they were, which is AAA guys.
My theory on why the Rays have played better lately is because they played the Kansas City Royals. So
it's a big help. It helps
it
a lot.
It is. Moving on, the Mariners, who we talked about earlier in the show, another super depressing story there. But this one is not, because Ryan Cook is back in the majors. You might remember Ryan Cook from earlier in his career when he was an all-star with the Oakland Athletics. He got hurt. He got bad. He disappeared. It's the story of most middle relievers. And now he's back at 31. He's thrown in one game so far, faced four batters, struck out one. That rate won't get you into heaven. He's probably not going to hang around too long because – you know, that's the life of an up-and-down reliever, but it's cool to see Ryan Cook, you know, find his way back into the majors after missing basically, in terms of big league action, missing basically the last three seasons. So good for you, Ryan Cook.
Yeah, I'm really pumped about this, far more so than most of the other things we talked about on the show. Former All-Star Ryan Cook, who made the All-Star game in 2012 with the Athletics. No shame to you if you forgot that, because I certainly did, and so did everybody else. I'm just pumped. I hope he gets a save at some point for the Mariners. I think that would be a nice coda to his career, nice little endpoint, because it does not look like he's got the stuff this point to be a long-term bullpen option for anybody. I'd just like to see him get a save opportunity, get to, you know, get some more of that major league money and try to prolong this thing as long as he possibly can.
Speaking of major league money, the Orioles made a swap at catcher. They sent down Caleb Joseph. They brought up Andrew Susick, who I was actually pretty high on a few years back. Joseph has been miserable not behind the plate, at the plate. He has a 42 OPS plus this season. And normally, you know, we would say something about the transaction itself, but I cannot get over the fact that Joseph was almost out hitting Chris Davis. And wow, that is a depressing team. We're just running through these depressing situations here. I mean, my goodness, when were we going to get something good to talk about?
Well, the thing is, the teams that are making moves at this point in the season are usually the bad ones. So I think that does change the calculation for how we look at our transaction analysis. And, you know, the Orioles are a team that's going to make some sort of change because the Orioles are awful. They're so bad. They have one good player. His name is Manny Machado, and he won't be with the team much longer. But I'm excited to see Susek get a chance. He's been raking at AAA. Like you, I thought he was going to be like, oh man, he's the best backup catcher in baseball when he was with the Giants. And then I was like, oh, he's going to really make a difference for this Brewers team. And none of that ever happened. But at least this year in AAA, he's been just pounding the ball for the Orioles in Norfolk. So maybe he'll get a couple of plate appearances, because Chance Sisko hasn't really impressed anybody at the plate. I don't think this season he's striking out like 40% of the time. So maybe he gets enough run to actually get a major league job, and we get to see what he can really be.
I hope so. And I just ask, where is the good news? And here is the good news. The San Diego Padres brought up a large human being named Franmil Reyes this week. He is 6'5", 270 pounds officially. What do you got on this big boy, Ryan?
I did not know of Franmil Reyes until the rumor started going around that he was going to get called up. He absolutely has demolished the PCL so far in AAA this year, in his first taste of AAA action. He does not look like the type of player, and I'm not saying optically, but in terms of his skill set, he does not resemble the type of player who is actually going to be a decent hitter at the major league level. Which, to be fair, he's had 8 plate appearances so far for the Padres and struck out in half of them. I really want him to succeed because we all love guys who are enormous and can hit the ball very, very long way. What is it? I think he's had something like 55 homers over the last 3 seasons, over the last 2.5 seasons, including this year in the minors. So any way
Yeah,
that he would actually,
correct.
I'm sorry?
That's correct. He's had 55 home runs over the last 2 and 4 seasons in the minors.
I want him to be great. I want him to be fabulous. I want him to take up a huge amount of space in the batter's box. But I think this is probably one of those short-term, like, oh, isn't that fun to watch? Kyle Blanks 2.0 kind of things for this Padres team.
Yeah, and I don't have anything to add at all there other than his baseball reference page has a weird age glitch right now where he's listed as being 20 when he was in AAA this season and being 22 now. And that creates this weird cascading effect where he is listed as being a 14-year-old playing in 2012 and he hit 267, 360, 416. He wasn't actually 14 then. However, that would be a very impressive line from a 14-year-old. So Franmil Reyes has a lot going on for him right now.
That is quite the player.
All right, and then I believe we are down to our final nugget of the day. Thankfully for you and us alike, thankfully not though for Jake Mariznick, who was demoted to the minors. Tony Kemp will get his spot, and basically, from what I can gather, the Astros just kind of want Mariznick to get more consistent at bats, which he will do at the minor league level. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a long-term demotion for Mariznick, and it really doesn't matter for the Astros whether they have Mariznick in the next over the next week and a half or 2 weeks or however long he's in the minors because they are the Astros and they don't even really need outfielders with Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander on the mound, right?
Well, they don't need anybody on the field at all at this
Yeah.
point. You can just, give everybody a break for a couple of innings and just get the strikeouts.
Speaking of getting the strikeouts, Jake Mariznick is a guy who can get the strikeouts. He's K'd 41 times in 87 plate appearances. He has one walk.
Yeah, Mariznick looks very badly broken at this point. Not just the strikeout rate, which is alarming even for a guy who has been very strikeout prone over his career. He's not making any sort of contact. He's not making good hard contact. He's been one of the worst hitters in baseball over his 87 plate appearances. This might be the death knell for him, I think, with this Astros team, because this Astros team is a very deep team, especially when it comes to their outfield. And I think 2018, a lot of people were looking to this as the year that, oh, maybe he can stay healthy and maybe he can really establish himself as a guy who deserves to be a second division starter or a center fielder for a team. And you don't get that many chances when you've got depth the way that the Astros do with, guys like Kyle Tucker coming and guys like Derek Fisher and George Springer and these other guys that they have as their outfield depth. I'm very nervous for Mariznick and his career, and I don't like to be right. I really did not like Mariznick as a prospect, and I really did not like him as a young player with the Marlins. And I really wish he would play well, but I don't think that he's got a long-term career in Major League Baseball anymore.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I don't think I have anything interesting to add, but what a depressing episode, Ron.
Well, I don't think it's that depressing. I mean, sure, we talked about, one of the a guy who was going to be a definite Hall of Famer getting a PED suspension and no longer going to get into the Hall of Fame quickly. We did talk about a host of injuries, some serious, some less serious. We did talk about some DFAs and a guy requesting a trade. No, it was a terrible episode. I'll give you that. It was a very down episode.
Yeah, I mean, we had like two good lines between us, maybe three if you really want to get generous, and that was about it. So,
I think the analysis, especially on your end, was brilliant. I think we did a perfectly cromulent job on this episode. It's just the rest of baseball that's the problem. It certainly is not us.
It is not our fault. Yes, it is everyone else's fault, and we're quite disappointed in you, baseball.
Yeah. Well, get your act together. Let's. We should probably have an episode coming up soon where we don't talk about any transactions so that we can talk about all the wonderful things that are going on in baseball, because those guys are not the ones getting traded. We could have some good times talking about Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor and, Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander a little more, or some of the players on the Red Sox. You know, I could talk for an hour on Mookie Betts and JD Martinez, but those guys are not getting DFA'd and hopefully not getting injured. So,
you almost never see a guy like Corey Dickerson getting DFA'd. So, I'm not letting that one go, people.
Well, I don't think you should be letting it go at this point. I mean, Corey Dickerson is certainly not the problem. Let's put it that way.
Yes, and on that note, probably a good time to sign off. I am RJ Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter, but you really shouldn't, so I'm not even going to give you my handle. You can follow all of Brian's work on Baseball Prospectus, and if you would choose, follow him on Twitter, but he has to approve you, so be careful on that one. And then Sean Brody, I don't actually know where Sean Brody is anymore, Brian, do you? Where in the world are you, Sean Brody?
Sean Brody has gone missing, and if you find him, we're starting to put pictures of him on milk cartons and things like that. Please call his parents if you spot him at some point.
He's probably at Pluckers.
That's true. He probably is.
And you can follow the DFA Podcast on Twitter as well at DFA Podcast, and keep up with all of our latest episodes on Baseball Prospectus, as well as all of your streaming devices that you folks use nowadays that I can't think of off the top of my head. I think iTunes, Stitcher, perhaps.
I know we are on Stitcher and on iTunes, so you can find us there also at Blog Talk Radio.
There you go.
There you
go. Have a good day, everyone.
Take care, and we'll catch you guys next week.